Next case on our calendar is 96-1993, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Edward Rinderknecht. Mr. Heafley.
Basically, our first one is legal as the error of the admission of hearsay evidence by a co-conspirator without independent proof of conspiracy. That happened here. It was conservative hearsay brought into the testimony of Nancy Gill, who was a lawyer from the Cincinnati Bar, who was originally an investigator in the case, and then became evident that she was abused as a witness. She testified about hearsay statements made to her by Mr. Wiley, another one of the complainants in one of the three counts, testified hearsay statements made to him by L.A. Jackson, who was an alleged runner for the case. There was actually no evidence of this conspiracy other than the hearsay statements themselves. And the federal rule, but not under the Ohio rule.
All the checks that were written to these various sundry folks that were alleged car repairs don't constitute any conspiracy.
The alleged conspiracy. It constitutes evidence the checks were written for car repairs. Unless you get.
You're saying written evidence doesn't match conspiracy just because it was written evidence.
It doesn't provide independent proof of the conspiracy, because to infer that these were payments for solicitations or unethical services to an agent, you've got to have some evidence that occurred, and again, there was no independent evidence.
A client testified, this person showed up, this person gave me a card, it had his pager number on it, this person who gave me a card. Physical evidence shows, not a check from the lawyer. I mean, you can't link all that up and call that evidence of conspiracy independent of whatever hearsay you have?
Not by clear and convincing. It's not evidence of conspiracy, because there was evidence that the person did do car repairs for a respondent.
How expensive a car did he have?
Well, he had a couple of very old cars. He needed apparently a lot of repair. I think the board was sort of skeptical, saying these are very old cars, and they're spending a lot of money comparing them a lot. I have just bought a very old car myself, sort of. That's why I just spent an awful lot of money comparing old cars to my stuff.
OAAP have any other clients than Respondent and the doctor?
Lally and Warner both testified that this was, the OAAP was Warner marketing, telemarketing organization. The people who testified, in count one, indicated that the lady who called and solicited them was named Roxanne, and Roxanne Jacobs did testify that she did do soliciting for OAAP. People were referred only to Barnard. She did not refer anybody to solicitor. In fact, when asked by one of the panel members, well, if someone did ask about a lawyer, what would you, who would you refer to? She said, I'd refer to the Bar Association for the lawyer's reference. Lally confirmed that there were the two plans, the OAAP and the umbrella, which was going to involve lawyers. He said that he received the copies of the disciplinary rules about what lawyers could or could not do. From whom did he get those? From a respondent.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
sir. It's brief and the arguments made in the brief seem to all rise or fall on the credibility of the witnesses that you rely upon, the respondent and the wife, the respondent's wife, Lally, and the physician, the chiropractor. So if the board panel disbelieved those folks and perhaps believed that they were all rowing the same direction, do your arguments still, what is left with your arguments if the panel disbelieves those folks, and
okay,
especially with regard to the conspiracy issue?
That's two observations. Number one, most of these people were witnesses of the related, not the respondent, Bar Association witnesses.
But I mean, their testimony is, the point is they testified to this, to their, you know, that they were two different
right.
schemes, that there were, you know.
In fact, in the, before the panel, the Bar Association accused them of committing crime. They have sent that into brief here.
But let's say that that's exactly what they believe.
The thing is, and I cited some Fifth Circuit cases, and I've cited them up here before in other cases. If you don't believe the testimony of a witness, that is not proof that the opposite of what he said is true. And then we get back to who has the burden of proof. And again, important significantly here, the degree of clear and convincing evidence. And basically what they're saying is that there's smoke, there's fire. We've got all this hearsay, we've got these people came down all from the same, according to the board, all three counts the people were referred by the same lawyer who succeeded Rinder. I think it's good that they mentioned the connection between that lawyer and some group very similar to OAAP.
Yeah, I mean, how did the office get to Mr. Rinder?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. While we're talking about smoke and fire, I would certainly have to accuse Mr. Weber or this Rick Rawley and the physician's health referral service or anything. But apparently they didn't have any compunctions about sending these people down to the Bar Association. The panel, I think,
they really shouldn't have.
You read the transcript. The panel is, I think, to me, is obviously concerned about this. Is this just something where one referral scheme is using the Bar Association to get rid of a competitor? Whether or not that's so, whether or not there was this conspiracy, whether or not Mr. Rinderpack was involved, it wasn't proved by clear and convincing evidence, it wasn't proved by evidence that was admissible under Rule 801 D2E.
Is there any evidence that Barnes referred his patients that he got through his scheme, which obviously he had certainly a scheme for going out and contacting victims of accidents and that. Is there any evidence he referred to anyone other than this attorney?
Yes, he testified that he's referred to 17 different law firms, which Mr. Rinder, in fact, is one. He did testify that he sent a lot of cases to Mr. Rinder, in fact, because he was more diligent about protecting large fees when the case. got paid by Render Connect to make telephone solicitations. Nobody did. All these people, these clients that make competitive payments and within the framework of the OAA, the input is finished. And we'll start the tournament at the time. And they couldn't get any correct evidence, so they used to say, 5 minutes, I'm off.
Thank you, Mr. Haefeli. Mr. Penny.
May I please report? I'm John Penny. With me is James McConnell on behalf of the Bar Association. There are essentially two issues we view at the court for today. The first is whether there is substantial record evidence to support finding by the board that the respondents had through agents solicited personal injury clients. And the second issue is that raised on our objection, and that is whether in a disciplinary case where the respondent's testimony denying wrongdoing necessarily must have been found to have been false, should the penalty constitute in this particular instance a termination as opposed to an indefinite suspension, which is the type of penalty that typically has been imposed by the court for solicitation of clients. I'd like to address perhaps the crux of the respondent's argument here, and that is the assertion that somehow the principal evidence presented by the bar in the hearing below was hearsay evidence. I reject that and suggest that by no means is testimony that individuals approach an accident victim soliciting that victim either in person by an individual passing a card out and recommending the services of respondent as well as Dr. Gardner, or by a telephone call under the guise of a public service organization called the Ohio Accident Assistance Program, constitute hearsay. These are verbal acts that these witnesses are testifying about as to what they personally observed and perceived by these calls and physically received in the nature of a business card. The hearsay rule under 801 is based upon the definition of hearsay where the assertion is being offered to prove the truth of the assertion. Here, the statement or conduct is that I know a good lawyer for you. Here, go see Mr. Rinderknecht. We're not trying to prove the truth of something like I saw Mr. Rinderknecht or Mr. Rinderknecht gave me $100 to solicit you, but rather the act is an act that this perpetrator, in collusion, of course, with Mr. Rinderknecht, affected the conduct about which this case is based.
Okay, where's the, you mentioned collusion, isn't that the issue? Where is the clear and convincing evidence of collusion, that Mr. Rinderknecht knew this was happening? He says, of course, that he doesn't know how they got his business cards, and Dr. Barner was doing this on his own. He was referring patients to other lawyers, and he was one of them. Where's the hard evidence? There's a lot of circumstantial evidence here.
Absolutely, and Your Honor, I will answer your question directly in just a moment, but I think that the tracks in the snow clearly show that someone went from the barn to the house after the snow fell during the course of the night. Specifically, the key evidence that we rely on is the evidence that's contained in the documentary record. As was previously indicated by Justice Lumberstrat, in the sense is that we have the checks that went from Mr. Rinderknecht to Dr. Varner, to include Dr. Varner as part of this relationship. Second, and most importantly, checks that go to Mr. Lally that are consistent with a contract that called for the payment of $1,075 per month for services to Mr. Lally. Third, we have checks going from both respondent and Dr. Varner to Roxanne Jacobs. We have checks going from respondent and Dr. Varner to
suggests, I think, is that he, when he made that statement, he hadn't yet read the rule. When he read the rule, he changed his...
That's supposition, and I think it's a reasonable...
Is counsel correct when he says there was no evidence by anyone that says they were paid to do this type of activity?
Well...
He emphasized that there was no one testified that, yes, I took $100 to chase that case.
That's correct. There was evidence in two respects touching on that cost. The first is that Dr. Barner admitted that he paid Roxanne Jacobs fees for performing the telephone solicitations on his behalf only.
For the doctor?
For the doctor only.
Didn't include the attorney?
She denied that it included the attorney, as did Dr. Barner deny that it included the attorney.
The answer is simple. He is correct when he stated there is no evidence to show anyone was paid by the attorney.
Well, I would say there's circumstantial evidence, Justice Sweeney, with regard to the checks.
Live witnesses who mouthed...
That's absolutely correct. No live witnesses.
The secret words, I mean, the special words saying, I received money for chasing that case for your client, his client.
That's true.
Okay.
The only caveat I would raise with regard to that is that Mr. Walker, who was one of the persons directly solicited by L.A. Jackson, testified that Mr. Jackson admitted to him that he was running cases for Mr. Render Connect and Dr. Barner, and they paid between $100 and $200. Now, that would be hearsay, obviously, but again, in terms of the evidence of conspiracy, I think that would be something, if there were independent evidence of conspiracy, could be connected in and could be considered as appropriate evidence by the panel in reaching conclusion.
Is it fair to say that if there's no evidence of conspiracy, that there is no evidence that this person did anything wrong?
No, sir. Not at all.
Tell me what else.
The evidence that was presented as part of the case in chief was the evidence from both Ms. Gill with regard to her admissions of the respondent in the first instance, and secondly, the testimony of the respondent himself, where he admitted paying huge amounts of money to Mr. Jackson, some $5,000 over a year and a half in cash. He took checks payable to cash out of his operating account.
Did he give any reasons for those payments?
He gave purported reasons that I submit were rejected by the panel below. But yes, there were purported reasons, and his testimony itself.
Were there reasons stated for all the payments that are involved to all these people?
Well, I think if you brushed them and accompanied them with denials that there was any nefarious purpose, yes, they covered all of those, but with regard to specific examples. And I'll give you one particular example. There was testimony regarding a particular check of $160 to Mr. Jackson. Mr. Render Connect, in his examination, is followed up by the panel's questions, said that that $160 check was for photographic services, taking pictures of an accident scene or something by Mr. Jackson. The panel chair inquired of Mr. Render Connect, well, did you make a note and charge that to a client? He said, oh no, I never charged those kinds of expenses to a client. And this is one of a series of some 30 or 40 different checks payable to Mr. Jackson for amounts that related to particular clients. Mr. Render Connect attempted to explain most of those as being loans during this time to Mr. Jackson, at which time apparently there was $1,000 or more of loans outstanding, and yet he was still paying $160 to Mr. Jackson.
So you're saying that the evidence was open to several interpretations depending on who you believe?
That's right, exactly.
Mr. Jackson testified?
No, he was not found anyway, and it was not subpoenaed.
So you couldn't use the second person's testimony against Jackson then? practice before?
In Leo, and then he took some time out to be involved in separate business ventures, consulting all this, you know, personal bankruptcy.
In Atlanta?
The bankruptcy, I think, was called Leo. He then moved to Atlanta, was married, and decided contemporaneously to that concludes my arguments and conception, and we believe that the decision by the panel below was fully supported by the evidence, should be affirmed, and due to the nature of respondents' testimony, we respectfully request that this board consider in lieu of the indefinite suspension term of this argument.
Thank you, Mr. Penny. Mr. Hafley, you've saved 5 minutes of your time.
It's kind of ominous that the bar is on the view or the ultimate chart of fact is not believed to respond to hearings to preserve the rules of the sanctuary. The board does a lot of criminal work. It's kind of scary. The person testifies in the defense and is convicted of this. The jury doesn't believe him. He then indicted, given another 7 years of perjury. There's some belief.
Don't federal court cases say that you can't punish them more heavily if the judge believes that they have lied on the
stand? Yeah, very recent. But that isn't that here. I didn't mention earlier, there's a fellow whose name goes through here and checks the Fulton Watch. I mentioned it because the board even cited it as one of its, crucial facts. There's never testimony of Mr. Watkins had anything whatever to do with any of this, either the OAAP or the running scheme or whatever. There's just something else that they try to throw in a mountain of evidence here, but without much significance, and the board bought it, which is a problem. I get with that. If Mr. Rinderknecht is unfamiliar with the requirements for disciplinary rule, as the bar suggests, and if he was proceeding on knowledge naively, then they would have found the checks to OAAP that had been already written on that. They would have found on the files in the case OAAP, because if he was naive, didn't know the rule, he was just doing what they say he had been doing, except the files don't show it. The checks don't show it. It doesn't exist. And I think that's sufficient. Said it was, or whether she had refused, yes, it's much more reasonable when you read the testimony due to two plans in Mr. Valley, or came up with one working with Warner, one working with Rivers, and which are completely different. They conjure up something mysterious about many checks made out of cash. And I think the respondent answered that very well indeed. He said, cash account for a while is a lot easier to write than Edward G. Rinder. I am sure it's sort of difficult to find, but it's a lot easier than the fact that writes the case. Clearly convincing, again, it's not the only reasonable doubt, but there's a lot more of the confidence. It's kind of frightening as a lawyer, and I didn't say much about litigation or sanction before. I'm a third generation lawyer, you know, no prior knowledge on the record could be deprived of his license on evidence like this. Perhaps because of a little vendetta on the law firm, perhaps on the judge, but it's just a pointing out this, I tried to point out to nobody, no smoking gun, nobody said, yes, this man gave me money to do these bad things. The rest of it, I think, is just smoking.
Thank you, Mr. Hafley. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.